Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. I want to take a moment and talk with anyone who is having any challenges with their branding or with building an effective marketing campaign. I'm super excited that my wife Valerie and I have a new marketing course, an online course that we share all of our secrets for building an effective brand and for building a marketing campaign that works and takes all the guesswork out of your marketing, provides an action plan, and gives recommendations for marketing tactics that actually get results. You can learn more at champagnemarketingcourses.com. Our guest today, Pamela Gold, spiritual strength coach, speaker, author of the book Find More Strengths, 5 Pillars to Unlock Unlimited Power and Happiness. Pamela, welcome to the program today.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really happy to be here.
So excited to have you. Who doesn't want power and happiness in the correct format? And
absolutely.
So our listeners are on a quest like I am to become better leaders, to be significant leaders, to be successful in the right ways. Let me start with your bio, and then I want you to elaborate on it, if you don't mind, so you can fill in some of the gaps. Pamela Gold grew up on her family's apple farm in upstate New York, graduated from Yale University, and then entered the business world in New York City, where she was a point person on an IPO at the age of 24. Leaving the workforce to start a family, she co-founded West Village Parents and went on to pursue her passion for fitness and wellness. Through this pursuit, she discovered yoga, which connected her love of philosophy, science, psychology, and wellness, and eventually led to her discovery of her life's work, teaching inner peace as the key to our greatest evolution and ultimately world peace. Her book is full of tragedy to triumph personal stories, along with actionable tools to increase power and happiness in life. That sounds amazing. What an exciting life you've had so far. Fill in some other gaps for me that got you to where you are today, to even writing this book.
Sure. Well, you know, after I entered the business world, I had two different jobs kind of right out of school, and then I became a mom. So it was leaving the workforce, kind of facing a lot of just more personal, like nitty gritty, roll up your sleeves, like how am I going to be, you know, the best mom I can be, the best wife I can be. There was a lot of stuff in that that really forced me to look deeper, because, you know, I was really successful at work. And it was really kind of being a mom and being a wife that was like, whoa, this is tricky stuff. And so it really was a lot of that personal pursuit, you know, trying to get really healthy, that forced me to figure out the stuff that ultimately, you know, I share in the book.
Hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that as well. And our spouses sometimes tell us we're doing a good job, but if we personally feel like we are having a struggle with balance, I just got back from a Nashville trip with my mastermind groups and came back and said to my wife, you know, my focus from this, my aha, is just to make sure I'm putting my family first. And she said, you are doing that. I said, but if I'm struggling internally, then I'm having an issue with it. So, and so I get where you're coming from. So many of our listeners do as well. Give me some things that you did to fully engage and embrace your other role, that, you know, we can feel guilty sometimes when we're having trouble with that balance.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was a process, right? Like, you know, first you identify that there's an opportunity for things to get better, and then you figure out what you're going to do. Like, what do you need to learn? What do you need to become more skillful at, to be able to have, you know, more joy in your personal life and in your professional life and achievement, you know, in those areas. And so for me, it was first kind of the awareness that things weren't as good as they could be, taking full responsibility for that, which was a big shift, because I think most of us, you know, have a balance where, you know, yes, we take full responsibility, but, you know, especially in our intimate relationships, it's hard to not at least have a little bit of kind of blame. So you start to get angry or resentful, that means that you're not taking full responsibility for your stuff. Right. So that was a process of kind of, you know, figuring that out, shifting to take full responsibility, and then work on becoming more skillful, you know, both, you know, with my relationships with, you know, my husband, my children, and my relationship with myself. And ultimately I found that it was my own stuff, as we usually find. Right. It's our own stuff that's actually holding us back in our external achievements, right? In our external relationships, in our stuff at work, our creativity, you know, feeling really inspired in our work, not feeling kind of overwhelmed and stressed. You know, it's our inner work that unlocks that stuff.
That's a great point. I can so strongly relate to your message here. Tell me though, what, you know, if someone listening, what's the first step? Is it self-evaluation? Give me some practical application of what do I even do if I'm listening? Go, well, it's not me, or maybe that's me.
Yeah, I mean, my first thing would be to ask, you know, what's your relationship with yourself like? Which is a strange question for most of us. And I remember I was kind of young when someone first said that to me. I was like 19 and in a real personal crisis at the time in college. And someone said to me, you know, you need to develop a relationship with yourself. And I was like, what the heck does that even mean? Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of us, we're so wired to live our life externally and to have all of this focus on our external world that we're not paying attention to or even aware of our internal world. So the first step is to kind of look inward and be like, what is my relationship with myself? Does that even mean anything to me? What does that even mean? And do some work around that. Like, do you trust yourself? Do you respect yourself? You know, do you keep your word with yourself? Like, do you even know what's going on in there? You know, a lot of us have zero self-awareness. And so that's really the first starting point, is to see, like, where am I even on that spectrum of having self-awareness? Because you got to start by looking. And then once you start to look, then you can start to be more aware. And, you know, we talk about emotional intelligence. I like to talk about spiritual intelligence. But it's that inner awareness of how we're feeling or what our state is that we may not have a lot of awareness around, or we may be pretty aware of it. And we may be very skillful in kind of keeping our emotions stable or keeping our spirits up. And we may be really good, you know, doing that for other people. Our emotional intelligence may be high already. Mm-hmm. Our spiritual intelligence may be high, but very few of us actually prioritize that because we didn't learn to. We learned to just be so outwardly focused, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, I did some exercises recently with some mentors I've worked with. And, you know, the couple things that stand out to me, one is we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And the next one is that others see us differently than we see ourselves. So as you begin this reflection, it's possible that you might uncover some things that are painful about yourself.
Sure. And oh, definitely.
Ouch, it hurts. But if you're going to take this step, which you'll tell us better than I will, but if you're going to take this journey to growth, which is going to make you happier, those around you happier, then you've got to be willing to go through some painful pain points as well to get to the other side.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about it. All of our power is on the other side of that pain. Right. And our fear keeps us from going there. But that's where the juicy stuff is. That's where our power and our happiness really is. And like you said, the first step is, you know, rolling up your sleeves and starting to shift and know that you're going to have to face that stuff and then figure out where you are in terms of your, you know, your survival mechanisms or your defense mechanisms. You know, we all naturally develop these from the time that we're little to keep ourselves feeling safe, to keep ourselves feeling good enough. And that involves a lot of strategies that actually aren't of service. You know, we blame others, we distract ourselves, we're not entirely honest with ourselves, we avoid. I mean, all of us, I mean, in our society, all we need to do is look at our phone the minute we start feeling uncomfortable. And it's like, oh, distracted. I don't need to face that. Whatever discomfort feeling was popping up, I don't need to face it. Right. You know, that's one of the major problems that our culture and our society really has, is that we have so many opportunities to distract ourselves and not do the work that really is what's going to push us, you know, forward and take us to the next level.
And God forbid we have be bored or have some stillness or quietness for more than 15, 20 seconds, or we have to look at things more closely, don't we? So many distractions. You're so right about that. So I mean, with so many layers, I mean, I think of myself as a 41-year-old man who is self-reflective and is looking at these things. I want to grow, but man, I've developed habits. And when you talk about those mechanisms that make you feel secure, I mean, I'm thinking of our listeners who maybe have never dealt with it and have just these layers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me a little bit about the process of pulling back layers. And then is it something you have to continue to do? Have you seen some transformational moments? I mean,
there's definitely transformational moments, but it is a practice that is never ending. Mm. But the good thing is that the rewards just get better and better. So it really, you get a lot of intrinsic motivation to just keep doing the work. So that's good. But the way it really first starts, you know, is to shift from, you know, I guess one way to explain it, and one of the ways I explain it in the book, is that there's different layers, like you said. And the first level that most of us spend at least some of the time in is in victim mode. And victim mode is kind of the lowest level where we don't feel empowered. We feel like we're a victim. We're looking around for someone or something to save us. Oh, when I make the $10 million, then I'll be happy. When this person comes into my life, or when that person stops doing this, then I'm going to be happy, right? And I'm sure that all of us can relate to at least some of the time being in that mode where we're thinking that there's some magic pill or quick fix or something outside of ourself, that when this changes, then I'll be happy. When the contract gets signed, when I get this new job, when I get this relationship, then I will be happy. That is a huge red flag that we, in the moment, are in victim mode. The first step is shifting out of victim mode into what I call, and other people call, hero mode, where we no longer feel disempowered. We start to have the bravery to say, you know what? I need to be the hero of my own story. I need to take this in my hands. Yes, there's going to be coaches that are going to help me, but every challenge isn't this doomsday scenario. Challenges are my opportunity to rise up, and I can make my life better. I feel empowered to make my life better. So that's kind of the first shift. And the thing about it is that most of us bounce around. So we may be in hero mode some of the time where we feel empowered, but then something happens and we get triggered and we drop back down into victim mode. Mm-hmm. And we're usually not aware of it. But red flags, if we're blaming anyone for anything, that's victim mode. That's 100% giving your power away. So red flag, anytime you find yourself blaming someone, say, whoa, no, I don't want to do that. I'm my own hero. I can make this better. I have the power somehow, some way. It may not be clear right now, but I can make this better. So that's kind of like the first layer. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And first of all, thank you so much. I love your approach on this, and it makes so much sense. You said a key word there that was something that I missed for over 20 years. As an entrepreneur, surprise.
You and me both, right? Right?
Yeah. As a hard-headed, self-reliant, pull myself up from the bootstraps, come from nothing, prove to make mm-hmm. myself kind of person, hold my cards close, do it on my own, be the hero by putting it on my own back. So maybe not the victim mode mentality, but the thing you said that stuck out to me was the word coach. Mm-hmm. Because for me, without having someone in my life, a coach, a mentor, somebody mm-hmm. that could tell me the truth when it hurts, that would encourage mm-hmm. me, I was successful in some areas of my life and then felt like I was in isolation in other areas.
We have blinders, right? We have
really
blinders.
Hard. Yes, and hard to be honest with yourself and hard to even know what honesty with yourself is. So tell me your spiritual strength coach. And again, I'm one of those people that never even really believed in coaches because I could do it myself. And mm-hmm. here I am.
Same.
Now.
I was me. I do it all mentally. It was the same exact way.
Hit a few speed bumps in my life and realized, oh, wow, this is probably something that I need to look at. So tell me a little bit more about the power of coaching, how it helped you.
Yeah. So I am a firm believer of coaches. I have like 5 different coaches that I use in different areas of my life because, like you said, you know, you have certain spots where you're too close to it, or you have some trauma around it, where you have some fear, you have some limiting beliefs. And the thing about our limiting beliefs, if people like you and I, if we were aware of them, we would have already done something about them. But the thing about these subconscious or blinded, you know, limiting beliefs, we don't know they're there. And so we really think that in one particular area of our life, oh, I can't do that, or that won't work, or some negative, you know, limiting belief. That's not true. And if we have a coach, someone that we respect, someone who we know knows what they're talking about, and they're by our side and they're like, why do you think you can't do that? Or why do you think that won't work? Or why are you stuck on that? Hmm. And just by having someone point out how we're looking at it in a way that's not of service, that's not true, it's like, bam, breakthrough. So for me, I use this, I'm very into like physical fitness. I use coaches for my physical fitness because there's a lot of things like with balance and taking risks that I'm like, oof. So I use it in that regard. I use it in my business because there are certain, you know, areas around marketing that I'll be like, oof, I really don't want to put myself out there. Or I have, you know, some subconscious limiting beliefs around people judging me or whatever. You know, there's an infinite number of ways that we self-sabotage because we have fear or trauma or just ignorance. We believe something to be true that isn't. So there's just countless examples of ways that coaches have led me to breakthroughs, because if I had been able to see it on my own, I would have already done it.
Right. You know, having a coach, like, doesn't make you weak. It makes you stronger.
And it's so much stronger. It's one of the best breakthroughs I had was asking for help and getting people in my corner.
Yeah, that's powerful. Hey, talk to me about how to stop rushing, how to be present. I need input on that.
So there's a lot of different ways to skin the cat. But first, let me explain, because I was a rusher. I was, and I wore it as a badge of honor because I was doing a lot of really important stuff. And I was squeezing as much in as I could. And so from point A to point B to point C to point D, as I went from, you know, each of my obligations and commitments, I was always rushing. I was always cutting it close. That hasn't changed. So let me just be clear. I hustle. This is all subtle nuances and, you know, semantics, I guess, sure, around the way words mean. But the difference is when you're able to be in a place of faith, in a place of peace, where you know that you are doing the best that you can, you are doing awesome work, you're going from point A to point B to point C, you're meeting with people who, you know, hopefully know and respect you, but even if they don't, even if it's someone new, you are the kind of person that puts in the best effort to never be late. And I'm rarely late. The joke is, like, I was always rushing and terrified of being late, but I actually was rarely late. But, you know, in New York City where I live, things happen, subways, traffic. So You need to have this presence and this faith and trust and respect for yourself, and then trust and respect for whoever's on the other side. That if you are late, they will understand that you did your best and that you value them, and you being late isn't a reflection of how much you respect them or value their time. And if there's someone that is that fragile and that reactive, they're not your people, right? So, like, right, kind of weed some people out. But it was really this major epiphany around trusting and respecting myself, trusting and respecting life, like having faith that, you know, I'm doing my best and I'm going to get there when I get there. And if I'm really going to be late, one, it will not be the end of the world, that it's going to be okay. Because I used to go into like hyper kind of controlling mode where, like, if there was a chance that I might be late, which was kind of always, I would be like super controlling about, like, well, where's the subway? I'm going to run. I'm going to, come on, taxi cab. Can't you drive that way? Go that way. Right. And it was so unpleasant. And I was missing all of these opportunities to, you know, see beauty or, you know, have some, you know, brilliant insights or whatever happens in the present moment when you're just being present. But the real key is to shift where you can accept and be at peace with, one, you're doing your best, that you're good enough, and that if you are late, occasionally it's not the end of the world, and you're going to be able to communicate, because there's things you can do ahead of time that, like, oh, you know, traffic seems to be tight, or worse, I might be cutting it tight on time, truly apologize if I'm 5 minutes late, you know, where you give people the respect and the heads up by communicating. There's a lot of things that we can do to be skillful around it and take action that is appropriate and demonstrates our consideration. But really the magic pill for me was just getting to a deeper place of peace, where I could just accept whatever was going down, because I'm always doing my best. I'm always hustling. So it was a real huge shift for me, because I was not a person that had that kind of inner peace before. I was always pushing, always kind of fighting, you know, didn't really trust that life was going to unfold in my favor, that I had to be always doing 150% or things might go wrong, which is fear underneath all that. Is a deep insecurity. And I had to heal that when we talked in the beginning about how it all shifts. That deep insecurity had to do with stuff from my childhood and to do with stuff from past relationships or past times when people were mean to me. Like, it's all, right. It sounds so silly and ridiculous, but most of our stuff is from when we were little kids
right. That
we don't even know is in there. That if we bravely go in there and be like, what? I can't believe I'm still carrying this stuff around. That's not true. I'm a good enough person if I'm 5 minutes late. Right. You know, it sounds so silly, but it's the truth and it's powerful.
Well, thanks for sharing that. A couple things stand out to me. One is, yes, I remember being younger and seeing a 60-year-old, a 7-year-old person and being like, they must have it all figured out. And as I'm getting older and I'm with people older than wiser than me, I'm seeing that they're that age, they're older than me, and they don't have it all figured out. And and it is interesting how some of the hang-ups I see are still, I see a 60, 70-year-old man, woman, who are dealing with things from when they were a child, from their parents or from whatever influence they had, and they're still not over it.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing. And the other that you remind me of is some things are out of our control.
Mm, and for me, a lot.
Yeah, right. But we worry about the things that we can't control. And for me, the big lesson lately has been, it was in a book I read that had a quote that said, behind every mountain are more mountains. So even when you pass through this current trial or this current being late or, you know, you lose a client or something happened that wasn't your fault, and to worry about it, it only makes it worse, especially if you're doing the best you can or acting with integrity and honor and all the things that we try to do. How do you deal with, or how do you recommend people deal with things when there's something out of their control or the worry angle when it's something that they just can't control?
Sure. Well, I mean, it's one of the five pillars. So there's a whole chapter in my book with has a lot of different stuff on this, because this was the hardest of all five pillars. This I call surrender. It's the hardest. It was the hardest. It still is the hardest, because surrender for most of us has like this very negative connotation. Like for me, I was like, hell no, I'm never going to surrender. You know, like I'm never, and then because we feel like it's giving up. If we stop that fight, if we accept that things are out of our control, in our mind, that's like weakness, and that's giving up. And it's actually completely the opposite. It's saying, I can come at this from a place of trust and faith. And it doesn't matter at all, like what we believe about God or spirituality or religion or any of that stuff. What I say is just look around at life. Like life is all around us. Like the sun rises, the sun sets, like the water, the tides, plants sprout, they grow. Like there is a life force that we are part of. Like we are that. And it is much bigger than we are. And there's a great Marianne Williamson quote, like you can try to control everything in your life, or you can let the same force that keeps the planets in orbit and, you know, the sun rising and setting, you can let that do some of the work. And so it was a real shift around, okay, if I can find a little openness to trusting that there is some life force, maybe it's just my gut, maybe it's just not just my mind, but maybe there's something more, you know, intuitive or something more going on. When those things come that are out of our control, then we can start that whole serenity prayer thing. Like, I know that I'm going to have the courage to change everything that I can. And I'm going to find that acceptance, the serenity to accept the things that are out of our control, which includes things that have already happened. And I'm sure you're with me on this, that a lot of the stuff I used to fight, it had already happened.
Right.
So what kind of energy am I wasting? Energy that I want to use to be making things better.
Right.
Wasting energy fighting something that actually already happened. And then, of course, there are things that haven't happened yet, but they are out of our control. And if we waste energy trying to control the things that are out of our control, we're going to be exhausted and we're going to be leaking all of that power that we want to be using in this focused, powerful way to make the things in our control powerful. So when you say, how do you do it? There's a lot of different techniques. One of the things that it sounds silly, but you can get a box and you can call it a worry box or a surrender box. Some people might want to call it a God box, but it might not be for you. But all you do is you write the things that are keeping you up at night, the things you're worrying about, the things that are out of your control. You write them on a little piece of paper and you put them in the box and you close the box and you're not allowed to worry about them. Because it's in the box. And like once a month, you go back and you look, and it is astounding how much those things just get worked out on their own without you doing anything. And so it's kind of that practice of writing kind of putting it in the box, closing the box, it helps us kind of connect with the internal process of letting things go. And it feels like we're doing something. So it helps us. It's like a crutch. I don't actually use it anymore, but there was a period of my life when that box was like my crutch. And I remember there was one day I completely freaked out. This is a very silly story, but there was a cafe that closed, and it was the cafe where I got all the kids' snacks. And the cafe not being open was catastrophic. And I fell down on the desk. It was at the YMCA, and I fell on the desk, and I was like, no, how can it be closed? And the woman's like, I know. I'm like, how long is it going to be under renovation? And she's like, I don't know. And I was literally, because I'm very emotional, I joke around, but I was lying on the desk. And then I was like, oh, I can put it in my worry box. And it was all better. So I was like, great. Because that is out of the cafe being under renovation, that is out of my control. And it makes no sense to waste even an iota of energy on stuff like that. But it's hard because we're not wired for that. So you have to rewire your brain. It takes practice. That's why the box helps.
That's great. I love that advice. And you know, for me, one of the things that bothered me the most when I would worry is, you know, and things that were big to me, they would affect our business. It might have been a vendor who was stealing money, or, you know, something that was big in my life. But I realized that I was robbing my family of the best me. Mm-hmm. The best me was going out and trying to fix things and then worrying, and I would come home just drained. And mm-hmm. I write a monthly thing in the Huffington Post, and I wrote an article about should I stay or should I go now, and I wrote about one of the ways of letting go, and it was, if it's robbing your family of the best you that mm-hmm. they need to have, because mm-hmm. we all as leaders out there in the workforce, whether we're entrepreneurs or not, we want that balance, and along with that just keeps – it continues to be a rolling ball down the hill, because then you're frustrated and guilty about how you're acting at home, and then you're not letting go of your worries. And so I love the idea of the worry box. I love that concept. If it works for those that are listening, I want to ask you just a couple more questions before we go. You talk sometimes about, and balance is a big thing. And I have a consultant I talk with who says balance is a misnomer. You know, you can't, you cannot simply give equally in every area like a rock star and have straight A's in everything in your life all the time. Tell me about, and especially for us perfectionists or us entrepreneurs that want to conquer the world, how do you launch a business, or how do you have an approach to building a company and also taking time for self-care or for care of those other areas of your life that are important?
Yeah. Well, for me, the magic kind of key to this is presence. Because when I'm present, I can feel what I need. So like you said, there are going to be times when you can't be in two places at once. And sometimes it means you're going to miss something with your family. Sometimes it means you're going to miss something with the business. So for me, the real shift has been to be present with myself, in touch with what I need, because then I can feel what's true in that moment. And that may sound nebulous and may sound strange, but the thing is, our mind will distract us and will keep us bouncing around here and there, because my husband still struggles with this, and he used to travel a lot for work. And the poor guy feels guilty no matter what he does. It's like he's constantly in a place of feeling not good enough. And so for me, I stay in the moment and I can ask myself, what do I need to do? And I feel what I need to do. Sometimes I need to be with the kids. Sometimes, any moment there's going to be a different answer. Mm-hmm. And you can't be looking around to see if you are doing the right thing. You can't look for external validation. You need to feel in your heart what is right for you in that moment. And then once you make the call, there's no thinking about it and second guessing it, because you will drive yourself nuts. Like literally will drive yourself nuts. So for me, I stay in the present moment. I feel what I need to do. I make the call, and then I commit to it and I don't look back. And so if I'm going to go on a business trip and miss this time with my family, I make that call and it's signed, sealed, and delivered, and there's no guilt. And this is, again, a lot of that inner work, which may sound nebulous, well, Pam, that sounds great. You know, I don't want to have guilt when I go on a business trip either, but this is the work. Because when you do this inner work, you make peace with your demons, and then you can actually surf all of the stuff in your life with grace and at peace, instead of struggling with guilt and fear and all the pride issues, all the different things that knock us down. And so I know it may sound like, you know, pie in the sky, but that's what I've connected with and figured out. And that's, you know, part of what the book is about. What I'm trying to share with people is that it's so counterintuitive, but it's this inner work that actually unlocks all of our outward achievement and makes the things that seem so hard actually become easy. Not painless, because there's always going to be pain, because you have to grieve the things that you miss and don't do. All it's still painful, but you're at peace with it and it becomes easy. If that makes any sense.
It makes so much sense, and I don't think it's pie in the sky at all. The present, that's the magic word that has been, it's been my prayer for my family, mm-hmm. is saying, God, help me be present when I'm, and I'm home a lot, but God, help me mm-hmm. be present when I'm there. And mm-hmm. even today, I went to visit my daughter at school for lunch because she wanted me to mm-hmm. be there. And I hid my phone. I left my phone in the car because I mm-hmm. didn't want her to see me even looking at it, because all it was going to do was split my attention. And mm-hmm. and this is something I've only started doing recently, but I almost saw that it was best for me even almost not to even be there than to be there distracted, because it just did that guilt and that worry that you talked about. So commit to what you're going to do and be present with, when you're with your kids playing, when you're with your spouse, be completely present with them, hide your phone, put some of those distractions away. You can focus, then be present when you're working on your things. Maybe it's later that night. Great. Then be present when you're doing that. But I love your advice. Let's talk about your book for a minute. We've just got another minute here.
Sure.
Find More Strength, 5 Pillars to Unlock Unlimited Power and Happiness. What can the reader expect when they read this book? What can they expect to have happen for them?
So I try, and the whole intention of the book is to explain and really kind of shift us from all of our external focus onto the internal focus, and show how that shift will empower us in ways that we can't imagine. And so the intro to the book basically explains that the way we understand physical strength, you know, practice makes progress. We understand mental strength, practice makes progress. Inner strength is the exact same thing. So if you practice these 5 really simple areas, not always easy, but simple. You practice them when it is easy, when life is not throwing heavy, heavy stuff at you. You practice it all day, just like you go to the gym once a week, 3 times a week, whatever. You get stronger. So then when life really throws heavy stuff at you, you have that strength to stay centered, to stay clear, stay calm, and handle things with grace. And that's how we achieve all of the stuff that we all want to achieve, you know, the inspiration, the creativity, the achievement, the joy, the laughter. I mean, that's the path to making it happen. And it's, you know, it's baby steps, and it is a practice, but it's something that we all can do. And we all are doing already. We're just not necessarily aware of it. But by being aware of it and making it intentional, it completely can change your life.
Wow. Thank you so much again, Pamela Gold, our guest today. Author of Find More Strength, 5 Pillars to Unlock Unlimited Power and Happiness. Pamela, how can we find your book or learn more about you?
Sure. So I have a website, goldevolution.com, and you can get the first chapter of my book free download there. There's a morning meditation that's free. And there's also a breathing guide, because breathing is one of like the main tools that we always have with us that I try to educate people about. That's totally, totally powerful. So my website, goldevolution.com, is the best way to find all that stuff.
Awesome. Again, the first chapter free from Pamela. So our listeners, I want to encourage you to go to goldevolution.com, get that chapter, get the whole book. And Pamela Gold, thank you again for being our guest. And we look forward to keeping an eye on the next great things that you're doing.
Thanks, Derek. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Take care. I want to invite you to join me in supporting the American Diabetes Association. I've got the honor of being a Kiss a Pig candidate this year, which means I have the opportunity to help raise money for the American Diabetes Association locally. The research, the ADA has been funding innovative research to combat diabetes since 1955. And in 2011, they funded more than $35.75 million a year in research at 139 research institutions across the country. The statistics, approximately 1.25 million American children and adults have type 1 diabetes. As many as 1 in 3 American adults will have diabetes in 2050 if present trends continue. I want to invite you to join me in supporting the American Diabetes Association. You can learn more at diabetes.org or stopdiabetes.com to see how you can get involved.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.